And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Greetings, everyone. All right. It's time for apologetics. Yes, you have entered into the apologetic zone and also Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. I am your host and I guess you could say Sensei Gary Matuta, here to talk about defending, explaining the faith with clarity, charity, and confidence. And we have a great show in store for you today. Coming up at the end of this break, we're going to talk to Matt Swaim about his journey into the Catholic faith. Many of you probably familiar with Matt through his morning show, Sunrise Morning Show, which is broadcast on EWTN. He also is doing work for the Coming Home Network, and he's a longtime friend, and he has a very interesting journey into the Catholic Church, and it'll be great to talk to him. It's always great. He's very entertaining, and also he's also sometimes you'll catch him as a guest host on various programs like Catholic Answers Live. And so Matt Swaim is going to be our guest sensei, I guess you could say, help us better appreciate the faith. And as always, we are going to do our exercises to get our minds thinking, sharpen our critical thinking skills, so on and so forth. And since it's Friday, that means our finding the fallacy for today will be a propaganda technique. And this propaganda technique we're going to talk about is accusing the opponents of the same crime. Okay. which is kind of an interesting propaganda technique. It's used mostly in terms of debate, sometimes in media, things like that. It'd be kind of fun to go through that. And also to meet the early church father for today. We have been having some really big hitters in terms of early church fathers. And today's early church father is one of those big hitters in church histories. It is Saint Athanasius. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Also going through his life and maybe a little bit of his writings. And as always, you are part of the program. If you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call at 888-526-2151. It's 888-526-2151. I'm sure when Matt's on, we got him on the line, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of questions for him. And also, if you have any questions that you would like to send to the Dojo mailbox, send our email to questions@handsonapologetics.com. That's questions@handsonapologetics.com. I do see the emails, and I try to respond to each one if I can. And sometimes, if you are willing, we will actually answer those on the air. In fact, last program, we almost dedicated an entire program to answering an email because it was a really good question. And it's time for our shout-outs. Hello, everybody watching on social media, live stream on Facebook and YouTube. Hello. It's great to see everybody. Yeah, lots of familiar names like M Mousepel 1, Ricky, and the rest of the gang, Mama Bear. Hi, everybody. And I'm getting high fives and applause on social media. So that's great. Well, that's good. Welcome to the Apologetics Dojo, everybody. And of course, welcome to you. Thank you for listening on radio. And please, you know, keep Virgin Most Powerful in your prayers. You know, we're doing lots of work, and we need the Lord's blessing. Also, if you could share, if you enjoy the programming here on Virgin Most Powerful Radio, share it on social media, like us, you know, send links to friends. I know that lots of people, they can't listen to the programs live, but they do listen to it off podcasts, which are available at the Virgin MostPowerfulRadio.org website, and you can get all the Hands-On Apologetic programs and all the other awesome programs that Virgin Most Powerful puts out right there on VirginMostPowerfulRadio.org. So, enough of that. Let's jump into critical thinking skills. And like I said, every Friday we try to maybe not do something that's an informal fallacy, but get something from the world of propaganda, because we are bombarded constantly by propaganda in the news, social media, everywhere, radio, and it's just propaganda is a way of sneaking under our critical radar to manipulate us to do or believe something. So it kind of tries to circumvent critical thinking and instead motivate somebody to do or believe or think something. And so, you know, it's very powerful in for politics. It's very powerful in advertising, that type of stuff. And today's Finding the Fallacy propaganda edition is accusing your opponent of the same crime. Now, like I said, this is kind of more of a debating technique than a propaganda technique. But basically it's this. If you're doing something illicit, okay, something that's not right, the propaganda move here is to accuse your opponent of doing that particular thing. Why? Because when the opponent reveals that you're doing it, then you could say, well, you know, you can dismiss it as a tit-for-tat response. Well, you know, my opponent's trying to, you know, play politics or trying to one-up me or something like that. In other words, it takes the air out of the person's response that you're doing something wrong, okay, or vice versa. So, you know, this is very common, like I said, in the world of politics where, you know, they accuse the other side of the aisle of committing or doing something that's wrong and because they're actually doing it themselves. And so there's no response because otherwise it just seems like it's just tit for tat, nothing big. This does happen a little bit in the area of apologetics, especially in debates. Where perhaps somebody knowing that their quotes are pulled out of context will accuse their opponent of doing that. And, of course, when the opponent points it out, then the person can just dismiss it as, you know, oh, now you're name-calling or something like that. So that's the propaganda technique for today, accusing your opponents of the same crime. And it's a tough one to diffuse, you know, because once the cat's out of the bag, or what do you do? Well, the only thing you can really do is to explain what's going on. He's accusing me of the very same thing he's doing or she's doing. Sometimes that helps. But like I said, it's not a form of fallacy, so it's a little bit harder to diffuse. Usually with propaganda, once you realize somebody is using a propaganda technique, the magic is gone. Okay, it's just not effective anymore. And so that's what we're doing here. You guys now know this technique. So next time you're watching TV or are reading articles online or something like that, and you recognize this, then, you know, you can spot it a million miles away and it won't affect you. So you've been inoculated. All right. Moving on. Let's talk about the Meet the Early Church Father for today. Who is St. Athanasius. Love St. Athanasius. Great defender of the faith. He was born roughly around AD 295 and died AD 373. Athanasius was born in Alexandria, Egypt, about the year, like I said, 295. He was ordained a deacon in 319, and he accompanied his bishop, Alexander, to the Council of Nicaea in 325. Excuse me. Now, that's Alexander of Alexandria, which, you know, boy, what a great name to be a bishop of Alexandria, Alexander. So he went with his bishop to the Council of Nicaea and served as his secretary there at the council. In 328, he succeeded Alexander to the See of Alexandria, and his career was basically, he was the champion of the Nicene doctrine. And of course, Nicaea met in order to clarify and reaffirm the faith against a heresy known as Arianism, which is this idea that Jesus was divine, but he was not the true God. He wasn't consubstantial or the same substance as the Father. So Athanasius, talk about facing onslaughts of attacks from the Arians. His entire episcopacy was incredibly contentious with the Arians. He was actually exiled from his see 5 times until he finally regained his place again in 366. And in his last years until his death in 373, luckily his last few years were in peace. But St. Athanasius, what incredible warrior for the faith. In fact, it's interesting that one of the times he was exiled, there was an emperor who wanted to stir up and undermine the Christian faith. So he ordered that those who were exiled should go back to their see, which was kind of funny because what happened was a lot of the Arians had exiled Orthodox correct bishops. And of course, when they were ordered back to their sees, basically it just it reinforced Orthodoxy, which was exactly what the emperor was not trying to accomplish. Also, Athanasius wrote several really important treatises. I really encourage you, if you get a chance, to check them out. One treatise is Against the Pagans, which was written in 318. And that's, pretty self-explanatory. In fact, St. Jerome refers to Athanasius' treatise in his two books against the Gentiles. But most importantly, this is one of those books that I think it should be on your bucket list to read before you die. It's a great work. It's actually several books, but these are very small books. So it's a book-length treatise. It's called Treatise on the Incarnation of the Word by Athanasius. It's not very long, but man, it is very deep and excellent treatment about incarnation. And also I put on the second part of that list, also if you could read his Defense Against the Arians, another very, very deep and informative treatise that defends the Nicene Creed. Coming up next, we're going to be talking to Matt Swaim, so stay tuned, everybody.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody, Hands-On Apologetics. And I'd like to call our guest, Matt Swaim, who is Communications Coordinator for Coming Home Network International. He's the co-creator and co-host of Sacred Heart Radio and also EWTN's Sunrise Morning Show. He earned his doctorate degree in media communications from Asbury University in 2002. Matt's the author of three, I know there's more than three, books published by various publishers like Our Sunday Visitor, The Ligurian, Integrated Catholic Life, and The Catholic Telegraph. He's appeared on EWTN TV, radio, Relevant Radio, Catholic TV, The Catholic Channel, and Sirius XM Radio, and he's also has guest hosted, I guess you could say, on Catholic Answers Live. Matt Swaim, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
Well, I don't know how to respond to an intro like that, Gary.
Well,
the last thing you were going to say is that he has also interviewed Gary Machuda 100 times on his own radio program. So
that's right. Turnabout's
it's
fair
great
play.
To have the tables turned on me. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it, being on the other side of the mic?
I don't know exactly what to do with this. You just let me have it for all the crazy things I've asked you over the years.
Okay. Well, I will do that. In fact, you know what? after reading your bio, I'm going to have you guest host on Hands-On Apologetics, so you can put down also guest sensei.
I have not worked to reach my word limit on my bio, and I need a few more characters, so we'll do it. Just let me know.
All right. Got you on the list, my friend. All right. So Matt, okay. Well, I invited you on because you have a really good background story. People are familiar with the works. I'm sure many of you have read. He's got some fantastic books. Hopefully we'll be able to talk about those as well. And, of course, you're familiar with his work on the air, but I don't think a lot of people know your journey of faith that you undergone because you were not born in the Catholic faith, right?
No, I was not. I was born in a very strong, committed Christian household. And, you know, it's funny, Gary, there's not really, I mean, depending on where you go in, you know, Christianity outside the Catholic Church and Orthodoxy and such, you know, some kids are baptized, some kids are, you know, christened, some kids are dedicated to the Lord. I was never sure what had happened to me until much later, just because it wasn't. We didn't think the baptism necessarily did anything, so it wasn't clear to me until much later that I had been baptized as a baby. Obviously raised in church, but my real kind of awakening in faith or kind of the pinpoint mark, if you ask a lot of born-again Christians, you know, what was the time that you gave your life to Christ? Mm-hmm. That would be for me during the mid-80s in vacation Bible school. And I was going through boxes the other day, Gary, and I found the little booklet, the little comic book tract that was given to me when my VBS teacher helped me lead me to Christ. It had a glove with different colored fingers on it, you know, a black finger representing sin, a red finger representing the blood of Christ, you know, and the, you know, a few others. And then you flipped it over, and the back of the glove was green to represent growth in Christ now that you'd accepted him. So that's the kind of environment I grew up in. But it was more in the Wesleyan sort of Methodist tradition. So you run into this all the time where someone will say, you know, once saved, always saved, or you're saved by faith alone, and things like that. That was not my experience. I was raised in the holiness tradition, Gary, and if you smoked a cigarette or stubbed your toe and said a cuss word, it didn't matter what you did before that, unless you had a come-to-Jesus moment and confessed that sin, you were done for. You know, there was no distinction between mortal and venial sin. There was no once saved, always saved in the holiness tradition in which I grew up.
Yeah, you know, a lot of Catholics, our familiarity with Protestantism is largely through anti-Catholics. And most anti-Catholics are once saved, always saved. But there's many different streams. And you said, you know, this is from the holiness perspective, where actually growing in holiness is what you're called to do, right?
Yeah, we believed in two different kinds of things in the Christian life, especially now I'm kind of referring to my days in the Church of the Nazarene. And I was in the Church of the Nazarene until mid-high school. We believed in two separate acts, one of salvation, right, where you turn your life over to Christ and dedicate your life to him, and then one of sanctification. And depending on which strain of the holiness movement you're in, you can go to a revival service and hear someone up and give a testimony and say something like, I have not sinned in 3 years.
You know? Really?
Like that's,
wow.
That's like the, you know, entire sanctification is sort of like the second work of grace. You know how,
yeah.
you know, some Pentecostals would say, you know, there's salvation, but then there's the baptism in the Holy Spirit that really pushes you over the top. And it was almost kind of a way to set Christians into sort of tiers, as it were. I never felt like the intent was to say these are the somewhat Christians and these are the real ones. Like it wasn't like meant to be stratified that way. But it always, there's always kind of like a question, like, am I one of the good ones? When am I going to get my big break with the baptism of the Holy Spirit? You know, a Pentecostal might say, I would say, you know, when am I going to really hit entire sanctification?
Yeah. Okay. So now just a, you know, a question, does Church of Nazarene, do they believe that you can ultimately obtain perfect holiness in this life?
It depends on who you talk to.
Okay.
I mean, that's certainly the goal. I mean, and there are certain individuals who have said along the way that they have. But again, see, there's not like a Nazarene Pope. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Right. Yeah. Right. There's no catechism of the Nazarene Church.
I mean, there's like, you know, articles of belief and stuff. And even at that, Gary, I mean, we weren't so much Nazarenes as we were Christians.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
We just believe that God called us in the scriptures to live lives of holiness and righteousness and to, you know, be kind to one another and to, you know, not get caught up in the ways of the world, and that Jesus Christ was Lord not only of this world but of the next. And, you know, we are called to model our life after him and follow the scriptures. And that was a lot more like that than it was following Nazarene stuff.
Yeah.
So that when we moved on from that to another denomination, when we moved, my Nazarene years were in Central Ohio, and we moved to Kentucky. My dad switched jobs. We went to a Free Methodist church, and there was enough similarity to where, oh, these people believe in the Bible and love Jesus and think you should be holy too.
Okay.
Seems like a fit.
Yeah, right. Right, yeah.
So, and a lot of Christians are like that. A lot of Catholics don't realize that the majority of Christians, at least on a practical level, are like that.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's something that's not talked about very much. And in some ways, I mean, we hold many things in common because of the stress on sanctification, too.
Oh, very much so. And as a matter of fact, you know, there, this idea of striving, the universal call to holiness, you know, I heard people as I was coming into the Catholic Church talking about how like this was this new thing brought in with Vatican II. I was like, universal call to holiness, man, this is all I heard every day, all day, from every pulpit I ever,
yeah,
I was ever in front of. I mean, that's just what we talked about all day, every day, is that you, me, your mother, your brothers, your grandmas, you're all called to holiness. That's just how it is.
Sure.
So
you became, you entered a Free Methodist church. Now, you know, there's so many different kinds of Methodist. Can you kind of orientate us what a Free Methodist is as opposed to like United Methodist, or is that the same, or?
It's not the same, actually. And actually, believe it or not, Free Methodism is older than United Methodism. Actually, you might know this, just from all the weird, you know, research you've done over the years. United Methodism is only like, what, like 40 years old, maybe 50?
Yeah.
Because it combined a few denominations that were in a Methodist-like tradition. It was used to just be the Methodists rather than United Methodists. And the Free Methodists split off from the Methodists back before the Civil War because they believed in several pillars of freedom, among them being, well, some of these sound like weird to us today, but, you know, free seats in church, meaning that rich people shouldn't get to reserve a pew up front,
okay,
you know,
that's important.
Sure. Like what's happening in some congregations, or abolition was a part of their platform, free the slaves, okay. Freedom in worship, a few other things.
Yeah.
So
the Methodists
part of that,
had a split like the Baptists then during the Civil War,
yeah.
That they're pro-slavery and abolitionist.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
But again, on a practical level, I mean, if you walk into the Free Methodist Church where I went to youth group, I mean, you'll find people there who moved to the area and might have a background as, you know, Assemblies of God or Brethren or, you know, Church of Christ or whatever. It just happens to be that this is where they like the preaching and this is where they hear the scriptures. So it has a lot to do with that. And that's, again, that was my kind of experience growing up. As a matter of fact, just to back it up a step, part of the reason my family moved from Ohio to Kentucky was because we had been very heavily involved with our Nazarene church. And when the pastor had an affair and everything went kablooey, there was a dispute, among other things, over, well, this guy's got some outstanding loans on a parsonage. Do we be Christian and forgive those loans to this brother who has fallen? Or do we say he's got to pay for his mistakes? you know, and like, and over that, there's just this explosion of personalities and conflicts. And it wasn't a full-on church split, but it was the kind of things that happen when a church splits. And so, you know, hearing this kind of basic message of Christianity, I began to, I had associated it with a trust in the people who were telling it to me. Mm-hmm. So when that shift happened in mid high school, you know, I was a pretty sheltered Christian teen, but then, you know, started to activate my, my sleeper punk rock genes, you know, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it started to, you know, kind of spark up some of the rebellious tendency in me. I didn't disbelieve in God anymore, but I disbelieved in like all the church leaders. I mistrusted them all. And I've had it developed kind of a really apocalyptic view of Christianity and got sucked into some of the rapture, stuff as a result. And bearing in mind, this is the early 90s and Left Behind hadn't hit yet, but it was going to soon.
So it was like Hal Lindsey.
So that was part of
Late Great Planet Earth, that type of thing.
Hal Lindsey is a little mainstream from the stuff that I was watching and seeing.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we're talking like Thief in the Night and Grant Jeffrey and Is the Barcode on the Back of Your Cheerios the Mark of the Beast? like, is Yasser Arafat the Antichrist? I mean, I was reading all kinds of weird stuff. And, you know, I would have a friend of mine from youth group as this was all shaken down. It was the end of our civilization at the Nazarene church, so we figured it might be the end of the rest of civilization, too. And so, you know, we were all into like reading Revelation and Daniel and thinking, how does this stuff apply in a 1-to-1 ratio to the events that we're seeing unfold today?
Sure. Well, hey, I hear the music coming up. Hold it right there. We'll pick up at the apocalypse on the other side of the break. We're talking to Matt Swaim, everybody. So he's our guest sensei today, explaining his journey into Catholicism. You don't want to miss it. Stay tuned.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Matt Swaim, and you're familiar, I'm sure, of her, of his work on his co-host at Sacred Heart Radio's Sunrise Morning Show, his appearances on EWTN, his work with Coming Home Network, his several books. And we're kind of looking at, you know, Matt's sharing his journey. And before the break, Matt was talking about, I guess, the explosion of his punk rocker genes and also a change in his worldview in terms of the coming apocalypse. So
where do we
go from there? The world's going to end.
All right. Well, you know, obviously this is also, you know, the year 2000 is coming up fast, too. So a lot of things are happening here. Kind of simultaneously, and I'm trying to figure out how to reconcile a bunch of them. First of all, I'm mistrusting all church leaders because I've been burned. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I just had my own world end at my Nazarene church, so I thought maybe the rest of the world will end too because the year 2000 is coming up. I don't know why I had that date in mind, maybe just because all the Y2K stuff. A third thing is, you know, in public school, I'm also feeling assaulted by a secular culture because of my Christianity. Mm-hmm. So all those things kind of culminate in, you know, I've got a dissatisfaction with modern evangelicalism and a dissatisfaction with the world. And that sort of, I guess, coalesced around a deep love and identification with Christian punk and metal and hardcore and underground, like, you know, rock and roll music. Uh-huh. Because here were people who were, you know, committed Christians, but playing stuff that might sound like David Bowie or the Ramones or Black Sabbath, but speaking the gospel. You know, a lot of people don't even realize that this is like a thing. Some people may have like heard of Stryper or Amy Grant. I'm talking like several levels beneath that. And started playing in bands and really kind of identifying with a lot of this stuff. We've got a little booklet at the Coming Home Network. Ken Howell wrote it. It's a little free ebook that I recommend to people, where he lays out what he calls five essential conversions for every, you know, new and not so new Catholic. And one of these conversions that happens to me during this point is a conversion on the meaning of history. So what I'm discovering the rapture thing kind of comes and goes fairly quickly with me. Because I'm realizing the more that I study, I'm like, who's been saying things like this over the years about the rapture and the apocalypse and all this stuff? And I'm like, I can't really go back that far and find stuff because it's a fairly new idea in the history of the church. I mean, we're talking like the last 20% of Christian history. But as I'm studying that, I'm also finding these authors, a lot of them through these Christian punk and metal bands, who go back farther than the Reformation. So I'm noticing that, like, in the liner notes of, you know, some Calvinist speed metal CD, they have a reference to the Confessions of St. Augustine, right? Or
really?
I'm listening to, you know, whoever, and they've got The Imitation of Christ quoted as, like, a book that they read or whatever. And so I'm seeing, among other things, you know, some of these things that point back a little farther than all the stuff that's on the bestsellers list. I had also picked up a job working at Family Christian Store, so I'm using my employee discount to buy, you know, mostly Christian punk and metal CDs, but the occasional, you know, C.S. Lewis book.
Yeah.
And then this book comes out by a guy named Philip Yancey, and it's called The Jesus I Never Knew. And I read it, and it was fantastic. It basically was like, we have made Jesus into a cartoon character and put him on a flannel graph, and we've sanitized the gospel, and that's what America has bought into. I was like, this is my experience. You know, I latched on to it wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And I read it again, and I underlined and highlighted as much as I could. And then I read it again and focused on the highlighted parts and thought, how can I use these in song lyrics? And I realized something. I realized the stuff that I had highlighted was, none of it was Philip Yancey stuff. It was all the people he'd quoted. So I was highlighting, like, Frederick Buechner, who I'd never heard of before, and, you know, Annie Dillard and some others who were more in the evangelical Protestant world. But I was also highlighting, like, Augustine and Aquinas and a few other of these people. And I'm like, I got to get their stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I try and order these things. CDs you could cut on these stuff, the confessions.
No kidding. And as I'm trying to order them through the catalog of Family Christian Store and trying to order, Flannery O'Connor or whoever he's quoting, I realize we can't order them. I'm like, well, that's dumb. Why can't we order them? They must be old and out of print. But I can find them at the secular bookstore. And it came to me kind of over time that there was a reason we didn't carry these books. It's because they were Catholic. This conversion on the meaning of history kind of came through a bunch of different directions, but among other things, it kind of stretched me back instead of being caught up in the zeitgeist, being caught up in whatever was whipping around in the headlines right now, what everybody was really stressed out about right now wasn't the only important thing. Mm-hmm. There's a rich tradition to draw back on. And that drew me back farther and farther. Mm. And in the midst of this, dissatisfaction with evangelical culture, I just wish that we could just scrap Christianity and just start from scratch with all these great ideas I had discovered. Maybe you've heard somebody say this, like something like this to you before, Gary. that after studying this and just being dissatisfied with all the takes on Christianity out there, wouldn't it be great if we could just scrap it and the few pure ones among us could just start from scratch with the good stuff we know?
Yeah. Well, that's
never happened before, right?
Primitivism and Reconstructionist movement. Yeah, I mean, whole denominations were started in order to get rid of denominations. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole Church of Christ movement, the Disciples of Christ movement is that way.
But usually, that's with the Bible, though. They wanted to wipe the chalkboard clean and start with Scripture alone. But with you, like, you were finding things in Augustine and Aquinas and, some great spiritual writers and stuff that wouldn't be a typical starting point, though.
No, it wouldn't be. And what I found along the way is that I liked them because I thought they were consistent with my take on Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
That's really kind of why I liked them.
Okay.
But I want to fast forward a little bit here because I started going to Asbury College in Central Kentucky Methodist Tradition School, and was taking some classes on C.S. Lewis and some other things, and found that there was a class on G.K. Chesterton that was offered. And I thought, well, I've heard that he's an influence on Lewis, and I've underlined a couple of quotes of his in other people's books. I'll take a class on Chesterton. I gotta say, Gary, that was my fatal mistake in all of this, because it was with Chesterton that I found all the irreconcilable angst, all the seemingly opposite impulses, all the anger at poverty and dissatisfaction, dissatisfaction with comfortable Christianity and the idea that people were too obsessed with this, with a God of mercy or a God of justice, or that people were misreading this and misreading that. And Chesterton had this way of putting it all together in this paradoxical, beautiful, adventurous whole.
Right.
And I didn't at the time realize necessarily that what he was talking about was the one holy Catholic and apostolic church founded on Peter and passed down through the apostles. I just felt like he had cohered around this one good idea that had survived through time. a lot of things happened along the way through that. But essentially what happened through that is my imagination got converted before I ever read like an apologetics book or the catechism, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so your imagination, explain that a little bit. We got a couple of minutes. What do you mean transformed?
Well, I growing up in that kind of holiness tradition, And just delving back into that a little bit more, the salvation is primary. You could sum up the one driving question in the holiness movement, and in actually in a lot of the Baptist and Calvinist tradition, with the one question: what must I do to be saved? Mm-hmm. Like, literally, it all comes down to that. Clear the table. Let's focus on this pinpoint. What must I do to be saved? Everything else is a distraction. Mm-hmm. Through Chesterton, I came to realize that instead of viewing all these other things around art and architecture and beauty and literature and music and all the devotional stuff that I would eventually come to find within the Catholic Church, instead of viewing those as distractions, I began to view them like a rock climber might view outcroppings on a sheer wall. Like, this is something you can grab onto and pull yourself up. So the way that I looked at the world, the way that I looked at worship, the way that I looked at everything completely changed. And when you start looking at everything through those sort of new eyes of adventure, then you become open to the idea of the sacraments. Your brain and heart become open to the idea that God, instead of just saying, do X, Y, and Z to be saved, might instead say something mysterious and beautiful like, this is my body, this is my blood. Right. That speaks more to the experience of a human being than him to say, all right, guys, here's step A, B, and C for justification and salvation. Solve this math problem and you will go to heaven.
Right. <Yeah. laughs> Very interesting. Yeah, so the things that were viewed as unimportant or even obstacles now become actually part of the fabric of salvation.
Yeah, because then you start to think, you know, you're out walking in the woods and you see a caterpillar and you think to yourself, nobody on the planet knows about this caterpillar except for me and God. Mm-hmm. And that's the magnanimity with which he made creation. Why wouldn't he not have made the picture of salvation with that kind of magnanimity too? Why would he have been so extravagant in making the rainforest, but so minimalist in telling us how to reach him, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, no, that's very well put. We're coming up on the break. When we come back, we'll talk about you coming in. So we're talking to Matt Swaim and his journey into the Catholic faith. Stay tuned, everybody. You don't want to miss it.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Matt Swaim and his journey into the Catholic faith. Matt, you know, you said that you had this kind of transformation in imagination. And this might be a little off track, but you're also a musician at the time. Did it change your musical outlook at all?
It completely overhauled it.
Huh.
As a matter
how
of
so?
Fact, this is I kind of hesitate to bring this up depending on who's asking, but that was really kind of the catalyst for all this. That was the thing that kind of sparked all the reactions for me. I'm the main songwriter for the band, so all this is getting like Dear Diary'd out to the world on every song that I write. the whole process, which is really embarrassing to go back and listen to now. But among other things, this is the mid to late 90s, early 2000s, when some bands that are huge now were just starting to break into the mainstream from the Christian market, bands like POD and Switchfoot and some others. And there's this huge debate in contemporary American evangelicalism about what makes Christian music Christian.
Right.
And with all that, we would be, canceled by youth groups who would book us or whatever, because they'd be like, you guys, your band's not Christian enough. Right, you guys didn't do an altar call at the end or ask an invitation. And that led me to kind of reimagine and re-explore the meaning of art. And bear in mind, all the time that I'm doing this, I'm also a huge, like, Lord of the Rings nerd and starting to discover that, there's these extra, extra, extra levels of spirituality within the Lord of the Rings that I'd never discovered before and some other things like that. So this whole question of truth, beauty, and goodness was all swirling around about, and music and literature, fiction especially, were really kind of driving that through the process.
Yeah. So when did you start getting an inkling, like, maybe the Catholic Church is where I ought to be?
Well, when I was in Bible college in Central Kentucky, we would make these kind of like Catholic-esque arguments or talk about how cool it was to read this or that, like from Augustine or whoever, John of the Cross. But where we were, there were no Catholics. Like, there's one tiny Catholic church in our county, but we were college students and didn't feel like going and risking it to drive all the way out there and explore it. Basically, this is all kind of like a thing in my head that we wanted to borrow things, or at least I wanted to borrow things from the Catholic tradition and go ahead and assemble them into this kind of amalgam of true Christianity that I was kind of like I had in my head. So I moved to Cincinnati. That's basically, I basically moved in to a sort of Christian punk rock commune with some people I'd met from touring, and we lived in Cincinnati kind of in a group together in this thing called Shadowlands. And it was me and all these disaffected like kids who grew up in fundamentalist Christian families and got excommunicated from their house and their church when they got their first tattoo. It was kind of like a weird, like sort of rebellious Christian thing. And I thought, what a perfect place to start a Bible study where we toss around these ideas. Inadvertently, I accidentally started a house church, Gary, is basically what happened. It was not what I meant to do, but it kind of happened. And in that, in the course of doing that, this horrible, horrible thought came to me as I'm basically using the stuff of Chesterton and, some prose of Tolkien and, all these other people that I've admired and loved over the years, Dorothy Day, Flannery O'Connor, and what have you. I started to realize this awful thought that maybe I wasn't right because I had picked the right things from these people to assemble. Maybe I was proving that they were right by being drawn to that. And maybe I was a grave robber. Maybe I was going through the cemetery, opening up the box with Augustine in it, taking out the expensive stuff that I thought was pretty, and leaving the body in the ground. Instead of actually taking into account the entire worldview, the entire liturgical experience, the entire sacramental life that had produced all that in Augustine, and thinking I could just like pick it like an apple off a tree. I had this like horrible, horrible, profoundly humiliating thought that maybe I need to actually go to Mass and see what's going on. All this time I'd never gone to Mass. I didn't know any Catholics. And so I go, I'm near the campus of the University of Cincinnati, and I go to a church near the campus, and I'm gearing myself up for weeks before I do this and thinking, what's it going to be like to go in a Catholic church where they have a choir of these monks in robes, or where they have incense flowing from the altar, where they're chanting the prayers in Latin? How am I going to know what to do when I get there? And of course, I go into like a campus ministry parish where they're playing guitars and holding hands and singing Kumbaya, and it's like a 2-minute homily. And I'm like, the thing that I dreamed of does not exist. It was this horrible, gnawing feeling. Of course, I was also, that kind of broke me of this thing that I needed to be broken of anyway, which is that, you know, I was selecting and curating this worship experience based on my set of preferences. And, you know, there are serious problems with the way that people do the liturgy and with the way people do music and homilies and stuff. But that doesn't mean that we all don't need to get reminded that it's not about us and it's not about what we like and don't like. And so that was a major adjustment for me. Eventually, I did get up the nerve to do RCIA. And I did it. And I came into the church in Easter of 2005. And I saw it through. But by that point, the thing had already been decided. Everything had been decided except for the timeline once I came to that realization that I'd become a grave robber.
Wow. Yeah. So, okay, so you become Catholic. A lot of converts, they have, this preconceived notion about the perfect church they're entering. Then they realize it's far from perfect. Once you became Catholic, I'm sure that was a huge change as far as culture and so on. Did you immediately get into radio? How did you get into, you know, Catholic ministry, per se?
Well, my degree is in media communications, and all along I wanted to get into radio. And everybody was like, yeah, it's probably not smart. Just so you know, radio is probably not going to be around in like 5 years. This is like 1997 when I started to go into radio. Yeah. And I'm like, but I want to do it anyway because radio is like, it's so great. Baseball only makes sense on the radio. You know, that's true. So I got into it. And then I took a couple classes on media theory, and I was like, there's no way I'm selling my soul to Satan to go work for the media. I'm out of here. but anyway, I came into the church in Cincinnati, and my wife had done some college radio stuff too. I met her in this whole process as well, which is a much longer story. And she's like, well, why don't you see if you can volunteer at the local Catholic radio station? Well, I said, sure. I mean, why not? I mean, it's radio. It's not that hard. So we called up the guy, Bill Levitt, who you've met. And I was like, yeah, so, you know, I just came into the church, really excited about my faith. I got a degree in communications. Radio was kind of one of the things that I worked on. He's like, could you meet at 3 p.m. today? he was so excited that somebody was listening to the Catholic radio station, which had only been around for a couple of years at that point. Okay. This is like 05, maybe 04 or 05. And he was so excited that there were people under the age of 80 listening. And I was like, you realize there's a lot more of us out there now. but he immediately plugged me in. I started editing some small spots. And then about a year and a half later, Brian Patrick, who had been hosting the ABC affiliate TV show, moved on from that position, and Bill knew him to be a practicing Catholic, and we put together a morning radio show and been doing that kind of ever since in one capacity or another.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Thanks be to God too. I mean, done great work. So
and
you're with
if
the,
I hadn't done that, Gary, I wouldn't know you. I mean, that's how I met you. So
yeah, it's almost as if it was divine providence.
Almost.
So you're with the Coming Home Network now. What do you do over there?
Basically the same thing that you and I have spent the last hour talking about.
Yeah.
All day, every
right?
day. A lot of people know the Coming Home Network for the Journey Home television program with Marcus Grodi, which has been on EWTN for 21 years. But the bulk of the work is just walking and talking with people who are on that process, on that journey, and different light bulbs are going off at different intervals, and they need somebody to talk to. And there's only so much you can do in RCIA. And yeah, you can Google answers to questions. You can listen to a show like yours or buy Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger if you want to know why Catholic Bibles are bigger. But to have somebody sit with you and pray with you and hear your needs and hear your concerns and deal with the culture shock of becoming a Catholic, that's basically all that we do all day, every day.
Wow.
We even have like a new kind of social network that we've curated that does that now. So if people go to chnetwork.org and click on community, it's basically like Facebook, but it's nothing but people who are converts and on the journey. So it's a really, really neat thing to be able to walk with people. And it fires me back up, Gary, because it helps me remember what it was like to be in that place.
Right.
It's a really cool thing.
Now, how can people get a hold of your books and what's going on? Do you have a website they can go to?
Well, the easiest way to find anything that I do is through my Twitter feed, oddly enough. I know Twitter is a dangerous place, but twitter.com/Matt Swaim. And actually, the latest thing I've done, I would recommend you go to chesterton.org because the American Chesterton Society has got a new book called My Name is Lazarus. And it's 34 conversion stories of people who came into the church by reading G.K. Chesterton.
Oh, wow.
And it's like Bishop Conley and Peter Kraft and like Joseph Pierce and Brandon Vaught and little old me. It's a really cool read. So if you go to chesterton.org, I would recommend people doing that because also that helps more people learn about Chesterton, and he's the guy that got me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Gary, always great to talk to you, and thank you so much for the invitation.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, everybody. That was Matt Swaim. And, yeah, great stuff, great guy. Please avail yourself of this material. Coming up next week, we're going to have another great line of guests. I'm pinching myself. Coming up, we're going to have Steve Ray, Rod Bennett, and the one and only Tim Staples on Coming Into the Dojo. So this should be a lot of fun. Some high-energy apologetics. Can't wait. Coming up next, talk about high energy. We're going to have the Tense Catholic Talk Radio coming up with the Terry and Jesse Show. The dynamic duo of Catholic Talk is what I like to call them. Don't want to miss that. And it's time for us to turn off the lights here at the dojo, shut down the Midwest Command Center. And it's been a pleasure being with you. And thank you so much for listening to the program. Have a great week. And God bless everybody. Take care.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.